protect children.
Hallway, and you should wipe it down with Lysol, and oh, that just sounds stellar.
That sounds great.
I may just sit over here.
We'll try to get things.
This agenda is so easy today.
Did we have that letter from Tuesday?
Oh. You ready?
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet.
Get around kids.
What's that?
Is that it?
Kids.
I think that she said it's on.
31. Yeah, it's starting. It's red, that means it's going. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Josephine County Board of County Commissioners. County Administrative Workshop in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. It is Thursday, April 19, 2018. Present are Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner DeYoung. And we're going to start out this morning. Should we?
Yeah, let's go with Scott.
Let's go with Transit. You want to come up and let's just take you around the bat, Scott.
Yeah, where everyone else is at.
Yeah, that's just, you don't know,
the
sense
of
beating
shows
that
up.
You're number one, so let's just get to that.
You don't want to do another program. Let's just tell you to whoever's not here.
That's kind of how it works.
Public health. Oh, your boss.
Something about worms and early birds and all that. I don't know.
I had two items on the agenda. The agenda that I was sent preliminary just shows the Title VI program. And what? So I'll just start with that real quick.
Sure. That's your item. We're skipping to A and, or excuse me, from item number one, legal counsel, to item number two, quarterly department updates. And with us present right now is Scott for item number C, Scott Chancy, Transit. And it is C1 is Federal Transit Administrative Title VI Program 2018-2021.
It was brought to my attention that this needs to get approved every 3 years, and so the last time it was approved was 2014, so it was past due. It's essentially the same report that was approved by the Board of County Commissioners in 2014. There was only been three additions or changes. Essentially, that was attachment F, G, and J, and those were basically service standards. Which talks about what the service standards for demand response service is, as well as the fixed route. And we talked about the other attachment was fare and service changes. We have to actually put that in policy that states when we're going to do public notice on any fare change, and that's what I set the policy. So the FTA states if it is a percentage change of a certain amount, then we have to put it in place, and I just went ahead and wrote it that any change in service, whether it be an improvement or a reduction in service, and same with fares, that those all solicit public public notice. And then the last one came to this board a month ago, and it was the transit operating policy. So those are the only three additions to this report. This is, like I said, a requirement. It was brought to my attention that we didn't have an approved version on file, so there is a letter in there that acknowledge a letter to the Federal Transit Administration in your packet that's from the chairperson that acknowledges that this has been recognized and reviewed by the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, and it's dated today. So if I can
make a motion to approve the chair to sign that letter and send it on the county's behalf.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll second.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Thank you for catching that. We didn't do anything that they could say, hey, you did this without being enrolled or anything of that sort?
Okay. No. All those things are in place and recognizable. The only reason this got noticed was we're under audit right now for our triennial review by the FTA, which will be in June. And the auditor is the one that pointed it out to my surprise. Because normally what I do is the FTA reviews all of our documents anyway on a regular basis with quarter reports and new applications, and the FTA office didn't catch it. So therefore, I didn't catch it because normally they bring it to my attention, and
sure,
I'm like, okay, I'll bring it forward.
You're good to go.
That's kind of where we're at. So, also as part of my quarter report, I submitted
a... Before you go on, should we vote on the motion?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
I just did.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
It's
aye.
Aye.
I was going to say it's Friday.
Thank
it's
you.
It's
feels like carries 3-0.
The other part of my department update is I gave you a quick overview of ridership. Our ridership's still going up. Looks like we'll beat 190,000, so we'll be 9 to 10% above where we were last year.
Okay.
There will be the transit master plan. It's in draft form. It'll come back before this body next Thursday for a presentation. The state transportation improvement fund, I gave you an overview of what they're showing our estimates to be, as well as with a rough estimate of what the cost for each service improvement is going to be. So I'll go over that here in just a second. And then just I wanted to just point out that we were awarded state discretionary funding for transit vehicles. So I received funding for to round out the purchase of 2 electric vehicles, the purchase of 2 heavy-duty diesel vehicles, as well as the purchase of 2 smaller demand response vehicles. So I was pretty happy with that. So everything that I applied for, we received. And this, I'm pretty happy that the state approved all of those awards. The other thing that they, I'll just quickly throw out there, is they also awarded us almost $80,000 to start down the road for looking at an electronic fare payment system. So this would be some sort of electronic tap pass. That's not going to fund the entire thing, but it'll start us down that road. I was hoping to get something that was compatible with other transit agencies in Oregon. Everyone in Oregon is following their own path, apparently,
jeez,
from what I can find out. And
who's appropriating these funds, and why aren't they requiring some sort of coordinated effort to where when I go to Eugene and want to ride a bus, it's the same fare token deal in Portland. The fare doesn't have to be the same, but
right.
I have to buy a separate card for every city that I'm in? That's ridiculous.
It is.
At least in the state of Oregon. You shouldn't expect that when you go to D.C. or something like that.
Right.
But gee whiz.
I agree. It's just like, you know, down in California, they have toll roads, and it's fast track.
Easy pass card.
And
yeah,
fast track
everywhere you go.
Almost the whole state of California.
It is the state that runs that.
But
the fast track.
Every toll, he's saying, would be the same.
Yeah.
Everybody takes Visa.
The state's giving the money. They should keep the system the same.
I think eventually you'll see, these systems, if you go proprietary, they're very expensive. And then to get to your comment, there's supposed to be an infrastructure plan in place, and it's for each individual area. So that's why there's not one that encompasses the entire state. Now, granted, we are in the same, it's called the Rogue Valley ITS plan. Granted, we are within the same plan as RVTD, but there's no oversight in terms of what there could be. But with that said, each agency seems to kind of go on their own path, and they don't always fully think things through. For example, TriMet's doing a proprietary system, but they actually are incorporating Google Pay with it. So I think at some point you will see
it'll be an online app.
That's exactly
that
right.
That everybody's doing, regardless of what the hardware looks like.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So I'm hoping to go that direction.
Yes.
Exactly. So it's something.
So then it doesn't matter what city you're in. You're using this app. Everybody is. And it's okay. That's cool.
That's exactly right. So, but this is the first delve into this, so we'll see how far we can get. Obviously, it's going to be an ongoing project, but I just want to kind of let you know because they awarded funds for that as well. And so,
you're going to work with Rogue Valley Transit, so we're on the same at least with them.
I would like to, but the problem with their system is their system does not account and allow for electronic fare payment within their demand response system. So it's just their fixed route. So they have an entire segment of their system that is outside of this fair electronic fare media thing. I don't think that's the smartest way to go. Because in my opinion, if I buy something that will be used on the fixed route, it should also be, technically by law, should be compatible with our demand response service, because there's no reason that our services shouldn't be seamless. And the reason I say that is because people can use our demand response system, and that doesn't preclude them from using the fixed route system. So what I'm doing at that point, if I don't include them, I'm setting up a system so those people have to have 2 different fare medium to pay. So,
and you have to have 2 administrative things, you know, 2 systems you're
correct
overseeing.
So I would rather not do that. I will talk to them. I thought their system was great up to this point until I found that out. And that's when I went, okay, I might not go that direction. Up to then, I was ready because I wanted it to be seamless, because I wanted people to be able to ride from here on the bus to Medford and be able to use whatever fare card is on their system over there as well. But it just doesn't look like that is a strong probability is when I started down this path. So, unfortunately, again, it's another example of everybody's kind of going on their own.
Do we still accept cash?
We still accept cash.
I was going to say, because eventually someday it'll probably be the driver carries no money or whatever.
And we're getting really close to that. So our drivers do carry money right at the moment. We don't dispense change, but they will sell passes and tokens, and it becomes a burden for the driver in terms of staying on time because they have to keep doing that again and again and again. The advantage and one of the reasons why everyone keeps going to electronic passes is it's so quick to board. You don't have to look at it to make sure it's an actual token. We get half-dollar bills all the time. Well, not all the time. More frequently than I would like. And that's where somebody's ripped a dollar bill in half and intricately folded it and then throws it in the fare box and the driver can't tell because they can't get at it. They can only look. It's in the box. So they just see that it's a dollar bill and then they let it go down into it. So electronic fare, tap, done, you're gone, get the money. So
yeah, it's really hard to draw that out.
Yeah. So that was it. Barring any questions, that was the end of my quarter report. And I'll be back in front of this body next Thursday as well.
It's a little complicated. It's not exactly one, and you'll probably answer it, but I consider myself a Yellow Book conservative. I wonder what we're spending on transit and what the effect would be if we were to take some of it. I'm not suggesting all of it, but has anybody ever looked at, like, we spend $1 million on your system. What if we were to underwrite Uber at 50% off the costs, up to $1 million of fares? We don't have any of the liability. We don't have any employees. It's 24/7, 365 kind of service, door to door. You don't have buses half full. Everybody's got a passenger. There's never an empty bus. I'm thinking about, like, you know, the future with Uber and everybody else and Lyft and stuff like that. The efficiencies of that and the demand, you know, it's right there when you need it. You call it when you need it. It's there. The private sector does it on a part-time basis. I know of some people who are doing it before work. They do it after work. It kind of depreciates the cost of their car and everything. It's kind of an amazing system, and it really wasn't around. And it doesn't feel like our system is transit is like arcane.
Right.
But in a few years, there's going to be other stuff coming on, and it's going to be like, well, that's the old way we used to do transit. Now, it's all demand response. It's in the private sector, and the government just subsidizes, like, certain people's in the population or everybody's. I don't know. I'm just
You bring up a very valid point. And it's a very complicated question, and it's a kind of a very complicated answer, but I will definitely state that you bring up a valid point. Part of the reason, there's some agencies that have gone that way. There's one in Canada.
For a portion or all of
There's
it.
One in Canada that went the entire system that way.
Was that at... I'm not coming up with this idea, I think, on my own. I think I've heard of this.
There's been several agencies, large, medium, most of them aren't this size, that have gone that direction for part of their demand response service.
Yeah.
With that said, I do have that transportation network company planning grant, and I have a feeling that we will uncover, based on my preliminary findings, that we will uncover that is definitely an option in certain circumstances. I do look to employ that as a possible option when we go to later evening because I know the demand is so low that it doesn't make a lot of sense. But there's some instances that you just pure geometry, you can't beat a fixed route because you're moving so many people through a corridor that you can't do it. With individual cars or an individual Uber type situation.
There is the pooling element on Uber. You can sign up for the cheapest route and they'll strategically, I don't think it would work in our geography or our...
Well, it could. The main thing you need to, I mean, people need to understand with the current TNC model, Uber, and this is repeated again and again and again, Uber is not in this to make a profit. They're in this to gain market share. So Uber is not charging the actual cost of what it takes to provide that service, either the operation or administration combined. That's proven again and again and again. And so what I have a feeling you will see is once they gain a large portion of the market share, they will raise their rates. So if you drive out all competition, not that that's what you're proposing, but if they were the only game in town and you were using them as to provide your transportation at a certain point, if you went 100% in that direction, your costs could increase down the road more than you anticipated. Mm. That's just part of the quick answer, but we do get federal funding and things like that. But I do acknowledge, I think you definitely have a point, and it's something that definitely needs to be looked at. I don't think it's 100% of the answer, yeah, but I think it's part of the answer.
Okay. I just felt there was so many limitations to, like, we want the system to be running, you know, later in the evenings,
right,
or on the weekends, and it's like you've got such a fixed cost associated with that, and like you said, fewer people doing it, but it's for those few people, it's integral to them getting that job that works on the weekends or
right,
is later in the evening.
Well,
and, but for that, they're having to pay for an Uber or something like that if they don't have an alternative or walk or take a bike.
And it is expensive with our model, because if you think about it, for every driver, for the most part, that I have out there, so one driver is not just the cost of one driver. One driver is one driver, a maintenance person, and at least one dispatch person in my office. Now, if I add another driver into that, I'm not getting another maintenance person, and I'm not getting another office staff. So on the margin, each driver at that point becomes less expensive. But still, just the bottom line to start up is very expensive.
The cost of another bus probably equals
that. I'm not even throwing in the cost of another bus.
Your buses are not cheap.
No, they're not. But it's something that I'm definitely looking into, because I think it's definitely something that we need to look at.
I didn't want to spend a bunch of time. Appreciate it, Scott. I know you're always thinking about stuff, so great.
Any other questions? No. Scott, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Did you need that letter signed right now?
Nope. As long as you get it to me before June. No, I'm just kidding. If you could get it to me this week, that would be great.
Yeah,
I'll upload it into their system.
It'll be today, then.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So I think we still don't have legal on board, but we're contacting them, find out what's going on. So let's go to item number two. Quarterly department updates, and we have Mr. Weber here. So 2A is public health. Mike Weber?
You let us know when we have to refer to you as doctor.
No. That is not something that's ever going to be okay.
It's in the queue.
Good on you.
Yeah, working on it.
Well, we like to, you know, hire them and then have them.
Bring them up.
Yeah. Well, no, we get a deal.
Give you one check.
I'm just kidding.
Working in the healthcare field, I'm not comfortable being called doctor. Too many people expect me to have
skills
I don't
have. Yeah,
that's
a lot of responsibility in your field. Like,
although my mother's very excited to introduce me as her son, the doctor, just not the kind that helps people.
Oh.
So, yes, the date on the front is wrong. I apologize for that. This should be pretty quick. It's the standard deck. You've all seen it before. So running through environmental health. The big point here is the solid waste program. We are working jointly with planning as well as the solid waste agency in the county to try and build out a solid waste program. It's a bit more structured, a bit more rigor, and we should be able to have a long-term strategy for handling the trash problem in the county. We don't have that in place yet. It's hit our inspections for the month, but we shouldn't have trouble making them up.
Really, I would like to be part of that strategy from a standpoint that it needs to emulate some other things that we've implemented that have been really successful, like our property sales program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's just a routine that you kind of get in with inspections, and then they result in, you know, whatever kind of follow-up through the process. I've been on this board for a while, and I don't have an idea of what happens. All I hear is there's a lot of violations out there, a lot of inspections happen. We've hired a new person in legal to handle, facilitate those things. There's better coordination with the solid waste agency. So there's been 2 years ago allocated resources to do the spot removals and that sort of deal. I'm not feeling like when I drive around or when I hear from people that, and I don't understand, you know, so my response isn't really good of, well, these are the things we've done, but I don't have any evidence to say that there are 30 more cases that are being addressed on a monthly basis that she's sick, as opposed to any other time of year or the past system that we've done.
Well,
we've only heard a few come out of legal in the last little bit, and those are ones we've actually already talked about. So that's not a challenge.
Oh.
It's not a criticism to you, because I think you're making progress, but it's like, I want to be, hopefully, somebody needs to be part of steering this effort. She's the liaison to public health, so it might be Commissioner Morgan. Let's hear some outcomes and tangible.
Right now we're trying to put an operational structure in place, because what we lack is the coordination capability to be able to take in these complaints, manage them, process them, actually rate them. Because we're talking about complaints that number in the hundreds, and being able to come to the board every month and say, here's the four or five top priorities. We have funding to address
too. It's important that those be coordinated through the commissioner, because I have a lot of experience of other people's priorities are not something that is necessarily going to translate into ours.
We aren't making personal choices.
Ours are health, safety, and welfare is the first. And if there's a nexus of sewer going somewhere, number one on the list, or you know what I mean?
The intent is we will have an automated ranking system.
Perfect.
And we'll come to you with the top four or five and use the commissioners to make any personal decisions on that matter.
When you do that, could you, there's a process, could you also say where you are in that process on the, where it's, we've gone to stage six, which is we've done this, and this is for our next step.
I'll need to map that out, but I can bring that next week.
Because I think it's, you know, we're going to, and the deliverables at the end, I don't know how far you are through that process. So yes, we sent them a letter, now we've sent them a citation. Next step is that we're going to bring the front end loader and an end dump, and we're going to clear the property. I don't know where that stands.
You know those things, what we're looking for. The other part of a cover sheet that explains how it got here, who complained, what is the criteria for doing a violation complaint, because it's different for certain ones. You know, sometimes it takes two. We changed it to like two within a half a mile. You know, there's the criteria. For me, I'm like, that's number one question. Were the criteria met for this to come before the county in a legal, defensible way? Yes. Then we can move it forward. So that's fundamental for me.
Okay.
Anyway, she's got that. Cool.
Animal shelter. Biggest thing there, legal hold process. For the month of February, we had 7 animals, which is a lot of space, a lot of dog kennels to be taken up. We're refining that. We're getting it whittled down. On Wally's side of the house, we're getting a refined process in place, and we're getting those dogs moved. On the prosecutor side, we still need to work on that. Dogs that are on legal hold, we're still working on resolving that one.
For me, the really important part of that is that the person who owns the animal being detained know up front that they're paying for the cost of that incarceration, right?
It's part of the information that's given to them. That's a bit more complicated, because the rate that they pay may be dependent on the type of violation. And so there are fees that they have to pay. If, say, their dog is at large, kills an animal versus just attacks an animal. So the fee isn't fixed.
Can the owner at any time say, the dog has reached its worth for me?
Yes. The owner can relinquish ownership of the dog. That doesn't alleviate the statutory fine
but
for the action.
It doesn't wipe the fine out. It just keeps the fine from going on. If they say,
yes,
I'm done, I had a...
Yeah, so they're going to pay ancillary costs for the housing of the animal, because we'll be able to adopt it out at that point. Or, depending on the nature of the attack, put it down, one of the two.
Do you have any of these outstanding, or any of them that just don't pay? I know they all want their dog to stay alive. And
that's my challenge with the system, is it's not upfront about you know, people saying, no, I want to challenge this,
yep,
but my attorney hasn't done anything and hasn't come forward and followed through with the process, so it takes a month. We're eating $50 of incarceration. We can't take other dogs. And then at the end of the day, they just say, no, don't worry about it. We're not interested anymore.
Yeah.
The system is, it's not the way I run it, but that's me.
Wally should have a process that we've mapped out. I think legal is going to be presenting that to you, or he'll ask me to, one of the two. That should help resolve some of those questions.
What's the process with the location of the shelter?
Location of shelter, honestly, we haven't moved forward that much. I've been told there's a number of sites that we need to go visit. I've just been too busy to schedule that out.
I personally can't think of a site that the county owns, so
that'd be a good
fit. A whole bunch of time, and I know the property portfolio is good as anybody, and I don't have a site for you.
I've been told there's two that are promising, and with the RFP and such, I just haven't gotten a chance to go out with
them. That's fine. I just mean that there's they may think it's promising. It really is up to this board, and I know I'm only one person on this board.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be advantageous to just point it out on a map to me first and say, well, what do you think about this? I was like, well,
that worked for you.
I've already got that kind of delineated as
our facilities liaison. Commissioner Hare is much more familiar with every property we have than I am.
Okay.
It just might be advantageous.
I'll talk to Aline and have her bring the locations up to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
There might be. We own enough property that it's totally possible.
Clinical services, only significant thing is Tarleton Reproductive Health Services, a medical services agreement has been signed and implemented. It's changing our fee structure for reproductive health. I believe you're all familiar with that one. Child parent health, we are almost up to full staff, and I'll go over staffing in a bit, but we are hiring a WIC supervisor, which will put us at full staff for the core program. Our numbers have been down. We're starting to see improvements. For some reason, it didn't print the March, but we're starting to see improvements, and the state has granted us leeway for a period of short staffing.
Where are the static determinants? Could there be a possibility that, I don't think this is true, but people aren't having as many kids, or there's fewer people that qualify for the WIC program, or nothing what's the corroborating information that just, that isn't part of it, that's
our decreased caseload?
Yeah.
Well, what you're going to see is a sharp spike afterwards because a lot of our client engagement. So WIC target caseload is how many people we're engaging that we're staff slotted to engage for a period of time, and this is based on a percentage. So we've been low because we've been short-staffed, and you'll see us overcorrect near the end of the year.
It's not education or something, does it come into that you're having fewer challenges?
Fewer challenges.
In the child parent health programs, as far as, you know, the people are taking better care of themselves or not getting pregnant in the first place?
Well, that's more the reproductive health program. But for the WIC program, no. It's even people who have a good understanding about how to care for their kids still come because it comes with a lot of resources. We're able to provide food benefits and healthy food benefits and things like that for low-income families. And in this county, that's 50% of families.
Okay.
So $1.4 million in food benefits last year. Emergency preparedness, same.
This standing topic can't be brought up outside of the executive session, just as it is.
Yep. And nothing too significant there. There's been some engagement. Our preparedness coordinator's been helping with planning and such. But all right, overview and staffing update. The only two big topics, RFP obviously went out. We haven't gotten any requests for information or requests for clarification.
That happens on Friday's deadline or something?
Yeah, tomorrow's the deadline to get those in. Nothing's come in. So either people aren't interested or it was
thorough. You guys did
thorough.
Such a great job in the RFP or the pre-meetings. I mean, if everybody was sitting there, they kind of had a...
That's the hope.
...buy-in on this. I mean, I thought it was really thorough. I just, you know...
I've been told that.
I don't know that... I think you guys did a good job, so... We didn't have that many... We didn't hardly have any questions on the Demick one. I don't know, maybe a couple, but very, very few. And those were, that was $1.5 million project. Very, very complicated, you know. You guys probably just did a good job. I wouldn't be worried about it.
Yeah.
It's an exercise either way. I mean, I think there was value, you know. So, great.
There is a resolve topic on here, syringe disposal. I had not brought it up with Commissioner Morgan yet, but we were having our syringe disposal at the Public Health Center was getting full, and we actually had dirty syringes being left on the ground in boxes. We got it resolved. There's going to be more frequent cleanup. And staffing update, we're just sub 90%, and I have a senior admin supervisor coming in the next couple of weeks.
Great.
Which I'm happy about.
No, that'll be excellent.
On your syringe program, where do they come from? Is it from diabetics or is it from drug
abuse? A lot of times it's diabetics. It's probably a mix. I honestly couldn't tell you the exact percentage, though, because we don't get access to them. We don't see them. HIV Alliance comes and picks them up.
How do the pens come in? Is that considered a syringe? Like a diabetic that has the pen that he stabbed himself in the stomach with?
They could drop those off.
I see very few diabetics that actually have the syringe and the serum and all of that other stuff. Most of them have gone to the pens, I think.
Well, you know, we did have, like, several coffee cans, like a dozen or so equivalent of little diabetic syringes dropped off, just kind of left on the stoop. So those do come up, but I don't know what the percentage is.
Well, I was wondering where the majority of syringes are. Are they coming from drug addicts, or are they just throwing them in the flower bits? They don't.
Our hope is that they're dropping them off there, but we don't know.
You ever test them for heroin or things of that sort?
We don't touch them.
No.
Destroy them?
I don't see them. We don't touch them. Okay. Yeah. I worked in enough clinics. I would never do that. One last thing. This is the updated contract for the school-based health centers with Siskiyou. It is an ongoing contract. It's just up for renewal. I was just dropping it off for your review.
I just signed?
Any changes to it?
Only financial. Okay. Only the funding differences. So I can drop them off for you to review if you have any questions, and I will be out next week. Any questions?
Okay. Any questions at all? Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's go with Public Works next, item 2B, Rob Brandis, Local Agency Agreement number 32545, State-Funded Local Project Program, Azalea Drive at Robertson Bridge Road.
Morning.
Hey there.
So we had a few lingering questions from last time we've gotten clarified. The big one
did
was...
Did you guys meet on this?
Yeah, we talked the other day. So basically what happens with the programmatic, as I suspected, is they come up with the 6, 7, 8, 10 fixes that you have to use statewide if you're going to the HSIP. So they would be wanting an actuated flashing beacon, but at the same time we talked to the engineer and he said, even if you did a study of both ways, it's not going to come back and say always on because people eventually start ignoring it. So the presumption would be the install is going to be an actuated beacon as opposed to an always-on red. So it was worth the question, worth the ask, but it's kind of like if you want to fix it under this silo of ODOT money, you need to use one of these eight treatments kind of a thing, and this is the treatment that they're recommending for that stage. So that's where we would be at. And to your point, question about the cross-traffic doesn't stop, we could certainly put those in ourselves outside of this project. They wouldn't fund it under that, but we could certainly put up those signs ourselves. We don't have an inventory at this point. The city has... 7, they thought. There's one at like A and Beacon. The one at Vine was down, actually. I was surprised. I thought that was still there. But typically they try to put those up in a spot where something's changed. So Vine Street, they put them up because that used to be a four-way stop, and they got rid of it on Morgan. So it's kind of alerting folks there's been a change. But we can certainly look at putting those up there.
What are the other elements that are possibilities in the state? And those are the eight that apply to this style of intersection? Or they just have eight options?
There would only be, that would be the one that would apply to this, but it might be they would have a treatment if you were having an issue with rear-ending collisions, then they would say it's going to be one of these two type fixes. If you're having folks that are missing a stoplight here, they're going to suggest putting a bigger backsplash on it with a different style of light pattern, that kind of a thing. So they kind of triage the different types of intersection issues, and then they have a programmatic fix for those, which makes it easier on their end to say, if we put this on, it will fix these 28 sites around the state.
Just seems expensive, but if it saves somebody's life, I guess.
Yeah, and the biggest cost really is just that running the wire, because the sensors have got to be like 800 feet back from the intersection, it's going to be hardwired. They talked, hey, do you guys want to do solar and save a few bucks? No, that solar would be gone in a week, so it's going to have to be hardwired, with hardened off a bit. So,
in walking the streets out there, one of the big things that everybody says, and it was again the other night, I think the lady at the fair board brought it up, well, why don't you fix this intersection? Why are you spending money on sidewalks when you should be fixing this intersection? If we did both, I think we'd gain miles of it.
Well, and it kind of goes to the point made yesterday about people putting the dollar amount on there. You don't know where these monies are coming from, and we aren't delineating that when we just say it's $630 for a new software system or something like that. You don't know what that means, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a clear picture. The money that we're proposing to use for this is not the same money that you use for the sidewalks, and they cannot be exchanged.
Well,
people don't know that.
Another thing that I think is, and I mentioned that to the lady out there at the fairgrounds.
And this is the system that everybody wanted, you know, of us not having discretion. No, we want this money to go for sidewalks. 1% of gas tax dollars goes for bike ped, off-street stuff. I mean, this is what voters wanted. So when they give us criticism about, well, how come you can't use that money for that money? I'm 39 years old. I inherited this from people who designed this system that way, because you don't want us to have control.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I like putting up both, but there is, and I see it on construction sites all along. I see it also along Interstate 5. They get so many road cones and flashing and diamond signs. And before you know it, you have no clue. And the guy's waving a stop sign, the other guy's got the slow sign. But if we just have a stop, and I think the cross traffic, I'd like to explore the cross traffic thing. I think that's a if they aren't looking at one, maybe they'll look at the other one.
There's no harm in putting cross traffic.
There's no harm, there'd be no harm done. I just want to make sure that we don't have a whole bunch of stuff like they have over here on 9th Street, where by the time you get to 9th Street, you've read a whole book. You have no clue what's coming around that corner. But I agree with flashing one, with the actuated one, is because if it is a constant flash, if you live out there, you're going to get used to that, and you'll ignore it. But yet the flashing one, oh, there is somebody coming.
And even if the locals get, quote, used to it, it will hopefully catch that person that's driving this road for the first time at night and it's raining, and they're kind of just tooling along. They may not see a stop sign, but whoops, hold on, there's a red light in front of me. So
I support this going forward. I'm going to go check with legal to see if they're coming.
Okay, thank you.
And I guess the other thing to your point, Commissioner Harris, is that there's obviously, then you have the ideological argument of, hey, well, this costs too much, we shouldn't accept it at all, we're just feeding the beast, or whatever you want to use for a terminology. But the reality is, we're all paying this gas tax one way or another. If we don't put it on our good project, it's going to go someplace else.
Well, I talked to Jan yesterday, I had a conversation with Jan Sosser-Ross yesterday afternoon, and she said something about this intersection. I said, Jan, I've been on the Area Commission on Transportation, and I just stepped in. Simon Hare's been there, Rob been there. How many times this has come up, and it doesn't score high enough to get a project, and now we're out of money, and it still doesn't score.
Well,
so
I don't think near misses make it to the criteria.
No.
I think that's what people talk about, the fact that I was up out there and I inched out, and then somebody's coming around the corner at 70, and I don't hightail it through that intersection, he's going to take the end of
and
my
you
car.
You misjudge that, because I misjudge, I think, how fast the car's coming, and then they're doing faster, and I really have to plan it.
But that doesn't make, you know, it doesn't score.
Right.
No, not at all.
Calls it in and be like, no.
So I think, you know, I explained it to her. I said, it's not for the lack of trying. I said, public work, you know, the representatives of RV Act, everybody's tried to get this thing fixed for years and years, or realignment or whatever it's going to take, and it just doesn't score high enough. So this right here probably is a good a fix as we're going to get that's paid for.
Well, thanks for keeping to work on this.
And considering the low match on it, I think it's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, the best fix is either roundabout or, frankly, cul-de-sacking the leg coming in from Robertson Bridge Road, which isn't feasible, so... Short of $2 million falling out of the sky.
Let's go ahead. Okay with it? Okay, so it's 3-0. We'll move this forward to the WBS. I don't think you need to be there for this. I mean,
I plan on it? Just, I mean, maybe, and okay, maybe it ties into a little bit of a bigger
good
area.
Public relations.
Sure.
Have your face up there at the mic. They like to see you.
Right. That's okay. Debatable, but all right.
Got it. Anything else? Moving forward to the weekly business session.
Good job. Mr. Ford will be happy.
Yeah, he's been on that RV Act long enough, too.
But there's enough space for a roundabout out there.
Not with the traffic speeds. The radius on it's enormous. We'd have to take the fire station and keep going. We looked at it hard. It'd be a pretty good spot. Yeah.
Okay. So any other questions for Mr. Brandis?
No, thanks.
And I got one. I alleged I had my monthly update today, so I can certainly bang through some stuff quickly. I don't know. I was on it.
Yeah, we've got a minute.
Whatever you guys want
to
do.
It's up to you.
Quick one? Okay, I'll just give you some quick highlights. So Commissioner DeYoung, talked about the Smerlin project. We met with the Baldinis on site Tuesday afternoon, talked about that reduced bulb out. They were good with that, so it'd be basically stripping the 4 or 5 easternmost spot equivalents off the bulb out, so it would die back in there just past Lamaire, because he does like the bulb out there. It gives us more room.
Yeah.
They got that. They understood the need. And then going back to the packet I sent the three of you last week, we're also going to be putting in an informal public parking lot on that vacated, or that county right-of-way that's just past the turn there. So that'll afford another 12 spots, which I think more than offsets for the ones that are going away on the street with a couple roundabouts. So I would not intend to advertise that hard as a public parking lot, because then otherwise you're going to be picking up trash and all that. But for the locals that are there, they'll know that it's an option to get their car pulled off, employee parking, whatever else.
Well, in my conversation with Jan Slusser last night, she was under the impression that the curbs were going to move in 6 feet, and that's where you're going to put the sidewalk. I said, the curbs stay the same, sidewalk go outboard of that.
Facebook was, you know, all parking is lost. And I said, Jan, have you seen the plan? And I posted it on Facebook, and she said, no, I hadn't seen the plan. I said, so where are you getting your information from?
I'm meeting with Dale Hirsch today at 1 o'clock, because I didn't get there yesterday for my 11. But so we're scheduled for 1 o'clock today, but I'm also going to meet with Jan and take that my plan, that the deal we had out here, and show her the amount of off-street parking. I said, you count that, that's more on-street parking than you have people in Merlin.
Not close.
I said, so, you know, I don't think we're harming you in any way here. So she was, you know, I talked to her. I said, let me talk to Dale and let me talk to Victoria. I'm going to go get my comeuppance with Victoria. And then we'll discuss next phase and what our next step is. But I think the project has good merit. Another thing is that, and I hope I'm right in saying this, that we are making an improvement to county infrastructure. That's our inventory out there.
All work is within the right of way.
To be real frank, I don't think we need to ask permission to make an improvement to our infrastructure.
Technically, right. All work was within the right of way.
But we're going overboard because we want to know what we want to do. You know,
I don't think we're going overboard.
We're not.
This is a process I would endorse.
We should. This is what we should do every time.
Yeah. Well, it may be county inventory, but we serve the pleasure for the people.
Yes.
And
we deal with the people. That's the thing.
I think that's really key. I felt like I couldn't defend the project, and I know that it had been in the queue for a while, but and I said this, I think maybe in the meeting, we talked about the guardrail issue and the overlay longer than we did about this project. I would have loved to have been out there and, you know, seen it, and in the meeting, if the curb's changing, I could have said, I've been out there with Rob. I've looked at all of the ball belts, all of the entrances that are going to do this, and I'm confident if we'd had that depth, the understanding that you have of this project and your engineers, it probably would have gone through on that day from a standpoint that we have looked at every element of this. I've had a chance to talk to half of the population that affects this, maybe not everybody. It's not my liaisonship, it's yours. You need to run the traps on that, but I feel really confident that you can bring on any opposition. If I know the issue and I'm passionate about the fact that it needs to go, and I know it really well, I'm okay with if mm-hmm. there's a little opposition. But if mm-hmm. I don't, I struggle, and I just have to say, I don't have an answer for you. Yeah. I wish I did. I apologize. We're going to go back. We're going to start from not scratch, because we've got a good product, I think. But it would have been providing clarity that, you know, let's not delineate those extra space as bike lanes, because I don't know that that's really what we're intending them to be, or, you know, whatever. Just little stuff like that could have been refined. And then our best foot forward, and we are a partner in the community, as opposed to being seen as though we're pushing it down. And I can't speak on that, because I don't really know as much as I would like to. So that's just my perspective. And that goes for everything. Give us more and let us tell you no. And it's not just for you, it's pretty much everybody. It's the budget coming up. I want to know that backwards and forwards, so that I don't have to rely on Arthur to tell me what's going on. I've already looked at it. I think I've said enough. Yeah. I think you understand where I'm coming from.
Point taken. That's on me to not have anticipated what would happen. I'm dumbfounded at the level of opposition that popped up. We talked about this, the Oasis. I mean, everybody's going to say they're turning down a what? So that's on me, though, to, you know, mea culpa, that to not have anticipated something popping up in the last 72 hours before it went down. But yeah, we'll change process for the future if it's got the slightest inkling of getting sideways.
We are Josephine County. We are always going to be different. And anybody who expects otherwise, that's not the people's fault. That's our fault.
I was amazed at the different stories that people had in Merlin. I said, my gosh, you can't make this stuff up. Where are you getting this stuff? And I think I found it in a letter that we all three of us got from Mr. Hunker. I think that
momentum. And if we aren't instigating the momentum, somebody else will. And that's how you find yourself on the back side of something.
Yep. Yeah, it becomes about being right as opposed to what the right thing ever was. Next week, I owe you my quarterly update on the management partners review. Just a quick couple highlights. Eric is now over at planning one morning a week. That was one of the things they talked about, was strengthening that link with planning. Didn't have a whole lot of customers. I think he had one the first day and two more yesterday. But having him there helps, puts out fires. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Folks will become more aware.
Yes.
And it just helps educate planning on what we do and them on what we do. He's not issuing permits over there, because it would be a pain in the neck to where he's getting a driveway permit halfway started and says, okay, now go out to public works, they'll finish that off. But steering that stuff before it even becomes a land use type thing, I think is going to be a good fit.
Something in your with this transition is you need to envision, because I know this board is going to be requesting this in the next year or two, of pulling the administrative element that sees the public. So much of your operation is so behind the scenes in maintaining the infrastructure and the fleet. A portion of it is engaged with the public, potentially on a daily basis. We're going to pull that out of your shop, because they can't move all of public works to the courthouse or what have you, and they're going to co-reside in a planning, building, and safety kind of an administrative one-stop shop somewhere in this building, so that when people say, hey, I need you to go to planning, you got to go to public works to get your road access permit, then come back here and get your development permit, they're not running all the way across town, and I need you to file that with the clerk's office, and that's going to change your assessment because you're doing, you know, ag use now and whatever.
Right.
Just go downstairs. Just go across the hall. Just go.
Yeah. It could end up being a co-funded position. It's a half public works, half planning. But yeah, just something to do that stuff.
No, understanding that you're going to not be everybody under one roof.
Mm-hmm. Not in the short term anyway.
We have really a location map of where to go now at the front desk, so you can hand it to them, say, this is where you need to go. And it's a map. It's not a go-to block.
Walk down the hall, right?
There's a lot of people that we have there.
But I would rather tighten. I think our goal is, and now that we see how spread out we are, what can we do to tighten that up so that people aren't running all over? You could almost apply for CMAQ funds if you did that, because congestion mitigation, air quality, just tightening that up might help out a lot. Cutting back.
Okay.
Vehicle Equipment Review Committee is kicking off. We're looking at Sheriff, Transit, Parks, Community Corrections, Juvenile Justice, Facilities, and Assessors as the potential folks on there. The first meeting next week, I believe, Ted's got it scheduled. So they'll talk about fleet policy, guidelines, vehicle replacement, that kind of stuff, but get a little more buy-in from the users, too, so they can feel like they've got a bit more say in how that works.
I think that's important, because it also lets the department know what you're looking for.
Right, right. And just another easier way for us to roll out a new minimum miles policy kind of a thing, or changes to how the fleet's running, or changes to the motor pool. So, no, I think it's going to be a good fit.
I don't think forestry will have any input any more than what a parks would provide.
And they may not. I think, yeah, sure Ted kind of threw it out there. If you want skin in the game, quarterly, yep. And maybe it's every 6 months after it's in place.
I don't think Streeter's going to care, because he doesn't have that minimum miles thing.
No. We're at 14 vehicles that are going to be surplus at this point now. I think we've got 5 sold, 9 more to go. They don't bring a whole lot back in. I think somebody bought that terrible bus for $800 back in Illinois. I don't even want to know how they're going to get it back.
You're kidding me.
No, fill it with pot and take it back. I don't know what's going on.
You know, there was that auction over in Jackson County. I'm glad we didn't participate because people lost their shirts. I don't know if you heard about that. But everybody showed up for the first 5 hours, and then they sold the big stuff at all the way up till 7, 8 o'clock at night. They were giving away, you know, 4x4s, trucks, dozers, triple axle trailers for $1,500 that were $15,000 trailers.
Which we knew about.
I was there in the morning. I drove back from Bend early, but I didn't stay. I mean, there's 3 rings of people.
Right.
So some of those auctions can be good, but they got a structure on them. I think JB learned something valuable there.
And the Gov deals is nice for small bore stuff like ours. It's not worth Ted spending 8 hours to try and sell a car worth $1,200.
Let's just go over to those things and just... there were Jackson County cars over there.
Wow.
Some sheriff's vehicles that were getting surplused and other things.
What do you bet that bus ends up at one of our compounds?
I will not take that bet.
For $800.
I will not take that
bet. And
it runs. We will make sure.
Buses converted into RVs in a really nice way. I've seen them others as well, but I've seen some really cool ones.
The fleet reduction's going well. IT is going to give up that old Jeep they've got. Our projected first year savings are about $17,000 just by getting off cars that are sitting there depreciating, not getting driven enough. Parts reduction at this point, you turn Brady loose on something, he goes. He's got the inventory down 52% from last November, 3,600 items to under 1,800. Had our kickoff meeting with Mall Foster yesterday for the sewer. That went well. We've got some next steps. We're now kind of arguing with DEQ as to how much water we think that land can take at the end of the airport. Our results came back with a number. DEQ came back with about a quarter of that, so now it's a fight of who soil scientists say can take how much. But
I don't care what DEQ says.
Right.
I don't.
I
don't know if I have to go to the top. They can. There's plenty of land there. They dug 100 test holes.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Unfortunately, we don't have those letters behind our name that say we're soil scientists or whatever. But yes, that's
We had our... Did they do that or did we?
Civil West, based on the results that they saw, here's what they said. We think that land can take. DEQ stands out there and looks at the permeability and says it can take this much. So the truth is somewhere in the middle. Is it closer to DEQ's or ours? That's the next step.
Civil West is an organization that has licensed, bonded, insured. This is their job.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's the pushback we're in right now.
Well,
the
DEQ
job is to get in your way.
Let me know if you need help.
Yeah.
I don't.
Sand Creek Bridge, the 90% plans are in hand. We're moving along with that. And this, I just want to show you guys a quick chart because I think this is kind of an important change as to where we're going in the future with larger projects like this. So historically, we've gone with the methodology on the left there, the quote-unquote old process. This is the Highway Bridge Program. So under either way, the state would say, that bridge, that Sand Creek's $1.6 million to fix. So under the old program, we would put up that $164,000. That's our match. 10.27%. The HBP program pays the remainder, giving us $1.6 million available for the bridge. So now as that goes to design, the design $480,000, construction $1.2 million for a total of $1.68 million. That potential above there is also matched from HBP. But our out-of-pocket cost is at 10.27% match there at the bottom, $164,000. With HB 2017 passing now, the state has a huge glut of projects they're doing, so they can exchange more money at that 94 cents per dollar that we typically would only do for chip seal, because they've got more big projects they can match that are federal. So they're saying you can run those exchange programs on bridges now like you used to for chip seal. So on the right column, basically now, we just take that initial $1.6 million and exchange it for 94 cents in the dollar. So the state says you got $1.5 million to play with to get that bridge done. What it does, though, you'll see in the design and construction, is it cuts all those federal strings. So design goes down by 20%. Construction, that's probably a little bit light there. Construction probably goes down by 10%. So the, still the cost of the bridge comes in at what we end up with in hand, but we don't have that $164,000 match because that reduction in the federal efforts more than offsets that 6% on the front end. The nice thing is there's no exposure for us. If that under this new formula, that bridge, we get going, it comes in at $1.8 million because you find something horrible under there, we basically can go back and do the remaining $200,000 under the 10.27 match. Plus, our time is billable under this new process as well. So if we get Sand Creek done for, say, $1.4 million, we can turn around and bill for our in-house time to get that thing done. What it means internally is probably a project of the Sand Creek size for Chuck's time, a bit of Richard, a bit of Neil. We're probably going to go from 300 to 400 hours to 500 to 600 hours. It probably adds 200 hours of in-house time to manage a project of that size. But our hourly rates are a whole lot less than enough to cover that $164,000. Say $100 to make the math easy for Chuck. You're talking about an extra $20,000 to manage that project and save $164,000. So my intent going forward is going to be to run every single bridge we can through the exchange program, every other single.
Until they're out of money.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as much money as that HB 2017 put through, the state's going to have hundreds of millions of dollars of projects that they can match at the federal level. So they'll keep saying, yep, please exchange it, please exchange
it. But the way I've always seen it is, yeah, they've got all, you think, gosh, they've got more money than they could ever possibly spend. And then up pops that third bridge up in Portland and takes it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're on the low man on the stick down here. You know, through RV Act, there is no money left over down here.
Right.
By the time it gets done with all their administrative costs and on ODOT and all their meetings and whatnot, when it gets down, that's like, ah, we just can't give you that
right.
commuter lane on Redwood Highway, which would fix that whole thing out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
When are you going to get that done?
Yeah, right.
That's one of my, after the show, sometime when you and I are talking, I want us to start pushing that commuter lane thing. I was out there for trying to get to the fair board meeting the other night and sat through three, if not four, rotations at Ringgit.
It's horrible. Mm-hmm.
And then when you watch the people peel off, 40% of them peel off at Redwood Avenue, where if you had let that third commuter lane in, they'd have just driven on out and gone out Redwood Avenue, and everybody'd been fine.
I've talked to my counterpart at the city earlier this week, and we're going to draft a joint letter and get something
going. Please do.
And I think the county...
Both inboard, inbound and outbound, that third lane is the answer to a massive amount of congestion out there.
Problem, Commissioner DeYoung, with all due respect, Mr. Chair, it's simple. It's probably a fairly low cost. When they came back with a $12 million bid on that...
No.
It's out of control what these things cost, and you're not acquiring any thoroughfare. You're not even hardly doing more pavement.
No.
I mean, it's just ridiculous, and it's like, I don't know. That's their idea of saying no. They'll just make it too expensive. I don't know. It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to continue to work on that. I think that's a fact. Something yes. that we
Tammy
need to.
Still the OTC chair?
Yes.
I think she's chair. She's on. Yeah, she's chair.
And she has offered, I talked to her in D.C. in March, and she has offered to come alongside if we need help with any of this.
Yeah. My thought would be that the county public works and city public works each say we'll put up $25,000 each, whatever, to start a study on this and kind of call their bluff to say if you think it's that ineffective cost dollar-wise, we're willing to put up a bit of our own money to prove it.
Our MPO funds for this sidewalk, are they all federal or state?
They're a combo. Most of it's actually from us in the cities. So it's basically they pull off some
but
of the SDP
funds
money
that
we get,
and then they flow through the MPO
right.
for those projects.
They're state funds for all
state
intents and purposes.
Funds.
Yeah. The CMAC could be lumped in there as a part of that project, which is still technically federal. But like the Merlin Sidewalk is all state. Yeah, STP money.
But we contributed a
yep.
portion of that.
Yep. Our STP used to be about $700,000 a year. Now it's like $580,000. So we put in $120,000 a year. That was the Josephine County road area that's within the MPO. Couple last quick ones. We got the load ratings back on Parker Lane. That's the one out there for Deer Creek Vineyard. No rating. I can't believe it. It's full legal load, so I'm going to be coming to you three in the next month or so with a proposal to make it local access, or if they want it, they say private. But either way, I want to get that thing out of our inventory because it's still narrow, and I think the Vineyard would like to take the guardrails off permanently or do something different because he still can't get a wide truck across it. But I am stunned that a $25,000, $30,000 repair got that to full load. Tagging off what Mike said, Solid Waste Agency received his tentative proposal very well. The $100,000 is budgeted for county projects again, as it's been. But the agency, everybody nodded their head and said, "Yep, we like the sounds of that. I think it's going to be a good fit." What else we got here? Kirby Landfill, we started hauling material out there. And, of course, 2 days later, CJ said, "Hey, we've got some biosolids available." They've done some testing on that. We're going to put the burden back on them to say, if you guys want to haul them out there, we'll absolutely take them. I'm sure DEQ would say you got to disc them in so you can't, like, leave it right on top, but it's just more biomass for the top. Vandalism's out of control there. The Rogue Valley Flyers, their airstrip actually got damaged in the last couple, 3 weeks. It's trying to, you know, gate off an 8-acre parcel out in the middle of nowhere, and it's just an ongoing battle. But unfortunately, that's a drag.
Is that landfill closed now? Because we had a lady at the window that said it's closed.
Yeah, it is.
It's closed.
The transfer station's out there.
There's no difference.
Right.
Right.
The public doesn't know a difference.
Right.
It's actually easier, the transfer.
You're just decommissioning the landfill.
Landfill is capped,
but
the transfer station is still there for stuff.
From a public use standpoint, they don't know any difference.
Right. Right.
Well, she just heard, the landfill's closed. So where are we taking this stuff? But it's not. The transfer station is still open.
Yeah.
As long as they have a place to take their stuff, I think they're okay.
I like that stuff. We should have to figure out something of security on that deal. I don't know what it is. Where are the needs for public access prior? I mean, at what point could we maybe gate the road in the evenings, which is probably...
Oh, it is. It's gated. But then there's, you know...
It's gated right there. Mm-hmm. But there are no driveways or any access point that's necessary? Or is there that driveway? That's the Radio Flyers driveway off to the right.
Yeah, and there's enough of a road that's been kind of boonie crashed basically all the way around it. So it's kind of you move the fence to get to the next big tree, then you move to get to the next big tree, and the latest has been they actually dug the whole cement block plus gate out of the ground, and they put it back in after they're done. I mean, it's got to weigh 400 pounds. And they pull the thing out, drive in, put it back in place. I mean, it's just...
They love the challenge.
You give tweakers in a weekend and anything can happen.
If they would work that hard.
Right.
Well, I don't think that's not tweakers. That's
animated.
That's just
the off-roaders going for it. Yeah.
Fun.
Yep. And last couple short ones. We finished up a project you may hear about with Grayback Forestry. They were doing a lot of brush removal out there into Kilma area, mostly on their trails, but a bit on the backside of the ditches. So we gave them a half day of chipping just to knock all the slash piles back. But it was good because they've got a light touch, and that's a sensitive community to those things out there. So it was a good partnership. And then early returns on the new spray truck you approved last year have been great. We're looking 25% reduction in cost just because it puts it out faster, it puts it out narrower. It's going to pay for itself. So
we were, Commissioner Haird, what did something the other day about freezing vegetation rather than spraying it? Where did I see that?
Freezing it or burning it?
Freezing it.
Wow.
Which essentially burns it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, when you freeze it, it's a freezer burn event.
It's a more effective way of killing it. It's not a cost-effective way of killing it.
No.
But I was just throwing out the alternative. What was that in reference to?
I can't remember.
Wasn't it roadside?
Well, of course.
Yes, for roadside, but I don't know where...
You gave us on Tuesday about the non-toxic Josephine County, and you mentioned...
I can't imagine how much coal you'd have to get penetration 3-4 inches deep in the soil.
I have no clue, but would you...
Nitrogen and
would you research that a little bit?
Sure.
I think it'd be worth looking into it. I mean, if anybody says, okay, did you even look into it? Say, yeah, we got a report on it.
There's nothing that competes.
It's kind of like the infrared burning or the vinegar. I mean, it all sounds good, but nothing works, unfortunately. Yep.
Not like spraying does.
And that's the other thing with the new truck is we can lower our application rates by probably 25%. It's just more efficient. So, I think we're being as good stewards as we can.
We're going to be asked if we looked at it.
I hear you.
Let's satisfy that. Okay.
Get the feedback about Mountain View Cliffs.
I wanted to talk about that. I listening to that. They're doing 50 miles an hour out there. I've been to Mountain View Place.
Oh, the Joseph
Price
Mountain
View
Place.
Right.
No,
and
there was two other people that came.
It wasn't Joseph.
I think
all three of them were in the.
It would be. I may go out there and say, okay, I want you to tell me what my speed is, and I'll do like 25 miles an hour, and they'll think it's 70. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, that's greatly exaggerated.
There's a sign.
We did put the 15 mile an hour
sign is up there. It sounds like a lot of it is more personal. There's a drug house or whatever allegedly at the end of the road they're hauling along on. They called us about having the speed trailer up out there. We have opted to decommission that speed trailer. It's 35 plus years old. It would need $2,500 to get it back up and running. It was actually, the guts were pulled out of a cop car 20 years ago, which tells you how old the tuning forks and everything else in are. So at this point, I'm not interested in getting the speed trailer going back up again. Plus, again, it's just a, hey, that's neat. Here's what you're doing. It's, at this point, it really is a law enforcement, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, let me talk to Sheriff Daniels, because if they've got a problem out there with a drug house, I think that's their big bone.
I've tried to read between the lines, and that's kind of what that, it sounds yeah. like to me. It's frustrating the guys are speeding if they're speeding, but it sounds like it's more about
issue.
His concern was the speed trailer, and like, what has happened to the speed trailer that it doesn't work anymore?
It's just old enough to where the batteries don't hold charge for more than a week, kind
but
of a thing.
Place the batteries, that's not a...
They go quickly because the electronics in it are just that old that it doesn't draw a good charge, and it's just every time it goes out, it comes back in for 5 hours repairs. Getting a new one of reasonable value and integrity is probably $6,000 to $8,000. And the concern for us is when it goes out, if it goes out anywhere besides a moderately urban setting, we're needing to chain it to a tree and then hold your breath for the weekend that it doesn't just get destroyed, because it's a frequent target.
All those trailers that were out there at Lake Selmac, you know, the alternative, the Detour, they lost their tires. I mean, they just, people were looking for any little thing.
Yeah.
And I can see the concern about if that's really the issue, a drug house, that's what they're looking for, is stuff that mm-hmm. they can buy their other stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not exactly, but I think you're right. I think it's the law enforcement element. It's not a, they want the speed adjusted. They want the people just put on notice that somebody's watching.
I think the bulk of the neighborhood out there, the bulk of the neighbors will do 15 miles an hour because they live there. It's the people that are coming and going to engage in activity down there at that one house.
Yeah.
They don't live there, so they don't have
a speed bump down at the end.
Beg your pardon?
Put a speed bump.
I don't even think the condition of the road, I don't even think you need speed bumps. It's...
And the house at the far end, so yeah, you
pretty,
know, they're frustrated.
Primitive.
They're
going all the way at the end, and when they get done with their transaction, whatever it is, you know, whether they're buying blueberries and they want to get home quick before they rot, they really want to get out of there in a hurry, and I think that's where our problems are rising. So I think it's more of a...
Okay.
So we'll look into that.
I'll stand by then if that's, I guess, what I'm hearing. I can circle back with Dave. I know we talked about it when the speed sign went up.
When the speed sign went up, and you know, I
don't think a speed sign is such a bad idea, and just having it rotating around the county. Speed is always an issue.
Speed trailer.
Speed trailer. Putting one in the portfolio and having it available, it's always an issue, and it is effective. I know it works on me, and I don't drive fast anymore at all. I don't think my car can, but it does seem to ratchet people down when something's telling them.
Well, you get up to the Canyonville corner up there on Interstate 5, and that thing's been flashing what you're going, mm-hmm. and it does. It does it to me. I mean, I have to be clicking along, and I figure my pickup can go through there 70 miles an hour that says, hey, you. So I think there's value there. But if it's going to be a thing that every time you bring it in, you haven't put new tires on it, and you're having to put LED bulbs in it, and they stole the solar panel, and they took all the batteries out of it.
I guess the other, I mean, I'm happy to, we could explore it and look at some options. I guess what I would ask for is some board support that it's going to be kind of confined to somewhat residential, less rural settings.
Absolutely.
And I would have your support. And if somebody says, hey, I want this out at the far end of Galise Road,
no,
it ain't happening.
I'd amend that to say, like, for instance, the people on that corner at Pinecrest, where you're coming down the hill, and we've got
sure.
the chevrons there.
Yep.
You know, that might be a good place to put it, just for public awareness that corner's there. I just want to see if there's something we can do to fix these things like that particular corner before they start calling it Dead Man's Curve. Dead Man's Curve used to be that deal out there by the golf course, and slowly but surely they made that where the meat market was, right there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And they slowly but surely made that less and less and less, and then they banked it. And you hardly ever have anybody killed out there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of my classmates that got killed out there. So I don't want another Dead Man's Curve. I don't think we need one of those in the county.
No, we can look. We'll look at a trailer. And
okay.
I guess just, I'm just asking for at least a nod of the board support that if somebody comes in and says, can I put it out in the middle of the pucker brush lane? And I say,
no.
Support me. Thank you.
Okay. Got it.
Cool.
Thank you, Mr. Brandis. I'm going to guess, let's take a look at item number 3A, Finance report and business update from Arthur O'Hare. And 3A is proposed fee change request. Did we hear back from legal?
They were hoping somebody would be here after 10 who could maybe join us. I asked that they come down, but...
Are they in a big, high-level...
Wally's reviewed and is not available this morning.
Okay, all right.
But they were going to try to send Leah after she got down with the...
Okay, well, that's fine, as long as we know that there's nothing wrong in that end of the building.
Okay, hi.
Hi, Arthur.
So, I think in your packet you have the three responses. I sent out, met with the board, of course, you remember, and we discussed whether we wanted to do a mid-year fee change proposal, basically on the request of the Parks Department to try to capture some of the activity this summer season. So I sent it out to all departments. I received three responses. You should see that in your packet, the Parks, Community Corrections, and Community Development.
Can I, before you go on, can
sure.
I make a suggestion?
Yes.
In our packet, everything's turned sideways because you put it on the long spreadsheet.
Right, because it's
so
portrait.
At some point in time, it would be landscape. Really swell if you had a paper copy of it so we can look at it.
Oh.
I can show you how to change the view to see it. I had to flip my view so I could see it.
Well, that's,
I've got
put that computer on it like that. And just
it'll flip the other direction. It's like my phone. I stood on my head and it still does. Got it. I got this. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. That makes sense. So the two easy ones, let's go with the two easy ones, Parks and Community Corrections. The Parks Department, of course, is wanting to upgrade the, increase the fee on their yurts. And so as Sarah, our Parks Department director, has explained in the notes, the yurts have been upgraded and improved. The new fee goes from $40 to $50, still below the cost of service, so we're not, the idea is we cannot exceed our cost of service, so in her estimate, she wants to go with the 50.
Do we have any competition out there in the private sector for yurts other than the Treehouse Farm or anything of that sort?
Well, I would guess the KOA possibly might be considered a, you know, they have the little cabins and things.
Does Valley Road Park or anybody have yurts available?
At the state parks, I don't believe so.
Okay, because I know we have to remain competitive. We can't undercut the private sector.
Right.
And that asked me a question. In a private sector yurt, our cost of service for a yurt is $5,183.
Mm-hmm.
What would the private sector consider their cost for a yurt?
Yeah, yeah. More. I'll just say more.
I knew that was the answer we'd get. Yeah, go ahead.
And then the second part of that, there's already a seasonal adjustment for the yurts between winter and summer, but she wants to change that seasonal adjustment to 55 at the Indian Mary during that during the summer season.
How many yurts do they have at Indian Mary? And I'm assuming the other yurts is White Horse?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, how many.
Okay.
I don't know. Specifically, number-wise.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
Do you
know? I'll ask
Sarah. Anybody know?
No, there's one at White Horse.
Big Bird?
There's one at White Horse.
Yeah.
White Horse, I've rented that one.
Do you know how many there are at Indian Mary?
I'm not sure
either.
Simon,
do you have any yurts or at the two locations?
Which two locations?
Indian Mary.
Indian Mary.
Is this a trick question?
Never mind the answer. That's an answer. I got it.
Three. I think I can... there's at least one. I would say probably not more than a couple. Sarah's put in one more, maybe, and I know they've done porches on the other ones and put in like nice flooring and stuff, so it's really nice now.
So
she wants to charge more.
Right.
We're
on the fee
right
deal.
Now.
What I told her is, I can't remember what I told her.
Aren't
you the liaison to the parks?
I remember a fair amount. What did I tell her?
I was just asking if you knew how many yurts are in Indian Mary Park.
I don't know.
And I think there's one. Mr. Ford said there's one at White Horse.
There's White one Horse. At White Horse. I would say there's at least three.
Okay.
Four.
Well, the first fee proposal that we were looking at was the parks, and it only deals with the yurts. That's the only fee that she's proposing to change, both as a general cost and then also at Indian Mary for the seasonal cost, so seasonal increase.
Okay. Wait a second. No, I had other suggestions about the you're talking about the seasonal elements. But
right, there's a seasonal element at Indian Mary for the yurt.
No, I wanted a seasonal element to apply for everything. Okay. And a midweek weekend thing kind of a deal. And in order for her to build this into her reservation system, it has to be done 9 months in advance. She's taking reservations 9 months in advance. So we do it now. That has mm-hmm. to be captured so that, you know, next spring.
March or whatever.
Right. Yeah. She's able to do that. If we wait, she's not able to do it for another, you know, year at least until if we did it in October and December.
Point.
So she's doing the new reservation system in-house. Let's you and I sit down with her like today. What's your time frame on this? Yesterday?
We have a time frame for next Wednesday in order to be able to implement July 1st, in order to have the fees effective July 1st. Next Wednesday, the board would approve the order setting the public hearing. I've got the dates here. But basically, if we want it, then we need to adjust this between now and when we publish the WBS.
She may not think it's a good idea, but I know hotels do this. I mean, on Memorial Day weekend at the coast, you're not paying the $97 at the Best Western.
Right.
It's $197 at the Best Western.
$230.
Or, yeah, right?
$230 at the front end.
Yeah, so, I mean, everybody does this. In fact, if we don't do it, and the RV park down the road is trying to, you know, take advantage of the holiday weekend or whatever, we have no holiday rates, we have no weekend rates, we have no summer rates, except for Indian Mary. I think that needs
except
to be
for
evaluated.
The yurts at Indian Mary.
I think that needs to be evaluated.
Wendy says that there are two yurts on at Indian Mary, just so we know, for FYI.
Just two?
Two. So we're talking three yurts, but I think...
I'm talking everything. She's proposed to three yurts.
Yeah.
I think that's too small.
Why don't we let you as a liaison, you as finance, and you two get together with Sarah?
Yeah. Yep. And she may not
think
it's a good idea.
I agree, because I didn't think about the reservation side of it, but we can't... Yeah.
You can't change the rate
once the reservation's
made. You can't change the
rate once you've made the reservation. Yeah.
So the sooner we make the rate change... to affect reservations.
It will affect next year.
People, when they come, they're reserving, they can only reserve 9 months in advance, but they typically do for the hot button.
Right.
The most
popular,
sought after
yes.
popular weekends, holidays.
Okay. That's so we've got that.
So we'll follow up on that.
Got your marching orders on that?
On
so
the
we
parks.
Won't do anything about the rate change right now, correct?
Well, if we...
On parks.
No, the only thing we need to do, as I said, is that we need to have a solidified information so that we can attach it to the weekly business session agenda for this coming Wednesday. Right. But
well,
if we
have
one today,
have.
Tomorrow, Monday, whatever.
We at least have what we have, so maybe
sure.
we should, if you guys...
Put it on the weekly business, schedule it, but
schedule
then
it.
The numbers may...
Yeah,
schedule
we,
with the information
change.
We have, and they can change. I mean,
we
can update. Changed them at the hearing.
That is true. You could.
Okay.
The second one is Community Corrections. They have it's a brand new fee, what's called a batterer intervention fee, and Nate attached his letter of justification for that, and so he's suggesting that this fee will help offset the cost of running that program within. Community Corrections. I don't know if you had any questions on that, but it's not a whole lot, but it's
does it cover
important.
It says an estimated new revenue of 25.2. Does
right.
that cover the whole program?
I don't think it covers the whole program, but it helps offset a good portion of the cost.
When you have somebody coming to a weekly treatment,
and they have to pay where it used to be was for the last 15 years it's been $25 a week for the people in town, but they're going out of business, so they have to have a program. So looking at bringing one in house, his proposal is $35 a week compared to literally for 15 years the other one's been $25 a week
and didn't make it.
Well, no, they were, I mean, you got people retiring. I mean, the programs have been in place okay. for 30-plus years, you know. They're just, there's no one replacing them anymore. But he has a proposal for bringing a program in-house that is more evidence-based, and but it's in line with the cost, so...
Right. It's a, it, I think, it, according to the letter, it works out to approximately $35 a week. But rather than charge a weekly rate, he's saying a flat fee for the
yeah.
for the entire program.
Charge it up front, they put it on right. the account, the people can make the payments, and it's...
They take credit cards?
I don't know. I don't know if they would take a credit card for this. Yeah.
Payment?
Yeah, certain departments do. The problem we have with credit cards is that typically we have to eat the fee, the credit card fee, the merchant fee, and...
I don't know that you would say typically. She assigns that in the tax assessor's office, and that's the largest
yeah.
incursion of credit cards.
Well, that's why we have a third-party process the credit card, so that fee can be charged on top of the
yeah.
tax.
I think she charges 2.5% of the transaction, so yeah. even if there's a 3% fee, we might eat 0.5%.
Okay.
She does still process quite a few because you get a lot of miles.
Yeah.
Any other questions? You got more to go?
One more. And that's the community development or planning department, planning within community development. As you can see, the fees here, we actually have the first four fees on your list are... no change in the dollar amount. Two of them, she's actually requesting to eliminate the fee, and the other two are simply relabeling the fee to make it a more accurate description of what the fee is for. So that's the first four on your list. The two new fees that she's talking about is the mass gathering small, mass gathering large. So her explanation there is to, I'll read it to you. Statutes require a hearing, and we can charge up to $5,000. I'm proposing $2,000. So it is similar to other public hearings, but slightly lower to remain affordable for the organization hosting the event. Small mass gatherings, we treat them like temporary use, 150. But I prefer we make it clear what they are. So she proposing to treat it like a regular development permit, $300. So those are the two new fees for mass gatherings, one large, one small, basing it on or tying it back to other public hearing costs. And all the other fees, there are no change in the fee, a change in the title, perhaps, or in the case of two of them, she's actually requesting to delete the fee.
On the last one, create a medical hardship structure accessory
right.
dwelling unit.
That's just a label. She's changing that to reflect the what other aspect, more clearly define what that is for.
I was going to say that.
So there's no change in the 300 fee. It's the same cost, but she's just changing the label.
Okay, because we get an awful lot of, where do we stand on ADUs?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we stand on them? And that is certainly a conversation that...
Essentially,
so her
I asked about where our stance with the ADUs, mm-hmm. and even though there was tried to be a fix to see if they're allowable, they said the question is still, can septic and everything else handle them? So we might not be able to get any more than we have right now because... It still has to pass through the state's muster of DEQ and Water Master and all that other kind of stuff.
But do we have a pathway and a process for that to do that?
No.
We don't?
No. The only exception for ADUs in this state is inside incorporated areas
within UGBs. Right, where you have a sewer system and a water system.
No, they can have them on a well and a thing. It's the state pulled back from what they let through, saying everywhere or outside incorporated areas. Now, they made that fix, but it wouldn't have gone into effect until July anyway, and they fixed it before that happened, so we're pretty much right back to where we started before. The cities have the authority, and I think UGBs. But, and again, because those are under, well, our old one is under city jurisdiction as far as code is concerned, but the new one is not. So until the new one comes in, even the new UGB wouldn't be subject to ADUs. But it's out of our hands. But she is pursuing
an ADU. It's a state issue then?
It's a city and state issue. She is pursuing a code amendment that allows for ADUs. It's not permitted by state law, but I told her, I don't care. People are doing it. There's just the back of the envelope, 7,000 ADUs out there, at least. Every other place probably has a trailer or, you know, a mother-in-law home.
Your garage
is, you know, and those are ADUs, and they're not, but they're probably fine. And I was talking with Josh LeBombard, and he said, your carrying capacity for not having, you know, incursion of the sewer system that was only permitted for 3 and now has 4, you know, bathrooms on it or whatever, in a metro area is a much likely thing to contaminate somebody else's well than some 80-acre, 40-acre, 20-acre parcel out in the middle of nowhere where, you know, the kids are gone. Yeah, we have a 3-bedroom home, but we've got the mother-in-law thing. There's only the 2 of us in here, and I got, you know, somebody staying out in the mother-in-law place in the garage or whatever. It's fine. The capacity, the carrying capacity is what Commissioner Morgan was talking about, is greater out in that rural area than it is, I see, in the concentrated metro area. It's a whole different subject if you're on a city sewer system.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can see the city sewer system saying, and that's, it doesn't matter how many you put on it. It doesn't matter. We're going to...
The code is there for that. It's good to go.
But that's why I was wondering if that was the nexus for them denying ADUs out in the county is the carrying capacity of septic. And its proximity to wells and so on and so forth.
I don't know their rationale, actually. I don't know that I've heard Josh say. Yeah, I think it's an element of control. You know, they feel like they can control it more in an urban area. Where I said, Josh, it's already out of control. And you're only pretending like you have. I would much rather have somebody go out and say, yeah, the wiring is, things are good. Somebody can live there safely.
Good to go.
As opposed to just buttonholing it.
Probably, I would guess that probably a lot of those are temporary anyway. You know, my mother-in-law, I need to move her home so I can take care of her or something like that.
Some of them aren't. Hard half to say. Of them
doesn't matter what they're doing.
Half of them are really nice remodels of garages.
Yeah. And if a mother-in-law moves on, then you rent it to the, you know, kid down the street or whatever.
Yeah.
Sonny.
Yeah.
My son moves home.
Yep.
Is that something we want to pursue?
I know there's, well, she's working on an ADU deal. Okay. I know that there's, what do you call that, Airbnb-style stuff going on in different areas where people rent out on Airbnb their little bungalow.
Or rooms in their homes, as far as that goes.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
The ADU is different.
Right. So. And I don't think this is not establishing. I mean, as far as this, the focus of this
fee change
here, it's not even establishing the fee. The fee is already there. It's simply clarifying the label. There is a fee, and that she's opening that up, I guess, or creating a medical hardship, as it says, for that particular structure. So what I would like for the board, of course, with dealing with the parks, but to put this on the Wednesday agenda to, and we'll adopt the first order setting the public hearing. So I will get that order to Wendy.
I have to agree with Mr. Herr, though, that this is, we talked about more with the parks.
Did I bring that to you guys?
You did. We talked about it here.
Yeah. Well, I know I talked it at the Park Advisory Board, and I think they were supportive of it, right, Mr. Ford? He's the chair. You know, and it just came to me in the meeting, so I didn't have an opportunity to float it by Sarah first. She's like, the administrative overhead with trying to do different rates on weekends as opposed to weekdays. Does Friday categorize as a weekend? I don't know if it's more of a headache to her than she wants to deal with right now. With
yes,
just
Friday's
doing
a weekend. Friday, Saturday, or weekend.
I'm just trying to throw out reasons she may not. Let's just pace ourselves. We're in a good place. Maybe we do the in-house, you know, simple.
Right now.
Fees are all the same. Yeah. And then in a year from now, we do the instituting of, you know,
a
seasonal deal. I don't know. She could say that and I'd be 110% supportive. We just haven't had a conversation.
Let's not muddy the water. I don't think. Let's just do this one right now. This is the first increment and get this one done. Because we are coming into the season. I see where your concern is about the 9 months thing, but I think she's going to need some time to put that together.
My thought is she'll have 9 months. You know what I mean?
Well, she has to establish
the
fees.
When you start thinking about you want it, you should have done it 9 months ago.
Right. Right.
And I don't think it's going to be that big of a lift.
But
I
if we can
be wrong.
If we can put something together between now and tomorrow or Monday, well, whenever you guys
she's
publish it.
She's got a whole Excel spreadsheet of her list, and we adjust them by 10% more on weekends.
So we'll see if that's doable, and then.
Yeah.
But otherwise, that will have
okay, we'll start with this. Yeah. We're going to put you down for the weekly business session.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks,
you will be there.
I will. I will be there. I might even shave and put on a tie. I don't know.
Oh,
anyway.
That'd be something.
The other thing, and I don't know where we exactly for the car cameras, if you don't mind me bringing that up. The sheriff car cameras, we had discussed that on Tuesday. There was an open question whether what the process would be as far as for this size of a contract, this dollar amount. But just for clarification, the equipment purchase is $140,000. So at least in the proposals that we've seen, which is well below the $150,000, which is the limit for a sealed competitive bid. So under $150,000, we have our policy and our public contract rules state that we can go through an informal process, which means we contact a minimum of three vendors, evaluate their bids and award it based on. So the sheriff contacted four.
This company controls 85% of the market share.
Well, he contacted four different providers.
Yeah.
You know, this, for by virtue of what Commissioner Harris said, this is a big company that provides a great service and gave us a great price on this. So.
The only other question that I have, if I might, real quick, is the request was for 20 cars, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Do we have 20 cars that are in the queue to be doing patrol? And, you know, do we have 20 deputies as opposed to, you know, are we buying this for more than we need at the moment that we need to? Or I'm not sure. So I just want to make sure that we're buying what we need.
Right. I think this is a flexible contract. I don't think it's a set.
Number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's.
Well, I know he's going to be purchasing what he needs to.
Right.
So it
right.
just seemed like something.
Right. It's a good question.
All right.
But yeah, with the under the 150, so that's something that we can bring to the board for approval then.
Sounds real good.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. All set. Item number one, Wally.
I don't have anything to say about this.
Okay.
I'm here to collect the feedback.
Okay.
I gather I was expected here. It wound up under the legal count. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm here to collect feedback. What do you got for me?
Okay, this is legal counsel emergency service contract with the city of Grants Pass.
Commissioner Morgan.
So we presented on Tuesday the contract. I had submitted it to legal on Monday. We said we'd bring it back today to go forward. Other than a typo I found in one paragraph that I typed, so it's my fault. I'm okay with moving it forward and having us address, but we haven't got feedback from legal on if there's anything else. So
there are significant challenges.
What's that?
There are significant challenges from my perspective.
Okay.
I I struggle with the need for me to do this, and it takes time to get there. So I don't want to. The title, Rogue Valley. We're not talking about the Rogue Valley. I'm just going to give an example. This is the Josephine County Emergency Management. I would like you to spend some time on this and use it as an opportunity to kind of work with legal, figure out what are the nuances that need to change, and I'm happy to submit my edits. I don't want to go through them right here, right now. I don't think that's an effective use of our time. I know we want to get this done, but I don't want the hire of this person to be predicated on this agreement. I'm ready to hire whether this goes through or not. I want somebody tomorrow.
No, this is a plan of how we're moving forward.
I just don't want this to hold it up, but I've got good edits. I think it's going to be 99% of the way done when we have a chance to review those. But they're significant more than just a typo or two. I did catch a couple of those, and that's good. But there's fundamentals of the agreement, the participants approving the budget, and the annual work plan. No, they make a recommendation to the board to approve the annual work plan and the budget. Nobody gets to do that kind of a thing other than us.
So. And that's my bad. So this was...
It's okay. I feel like this might be a little bit rushed, and so I'd rather us take a little bit of time.
This was originally predicated on that four agencies would be involved and that each agency would present a member to be a part of an executive committee that would do this.
I don't mind structuring something that has the ability to take in other agencies and participants as they're outlined here, and that's good. But this still has to have the governing body be the governing body and act as such.
In item number two, instead of approve an annual budget, submit an annual budget, something like that.
And the idea wasn't to, our intent, and I hadn't gone through...
Go through this, that's what I'm requesting, is
was
sharpen your pencil and...
That everything would go through us. They would make recommendations and such, but
that's
it is
not how this
body.
Is. This is okay. Just give another couple, a little bit of time. Let's revisit this next week, whatever day it is. For all parties
concerned.
If
you have any edits, I'd recommend.
I bring them down. They're right
awesome.
Here.
Sweet.
They're fairly clear. I feel like I did more work on this than I would have liked to.
Okay.
It wasn't ready. This is a draft one. I would like to get it more of a final draft in the future on products. So otherwise,
well, we hadn't presented it to this board, so it was draft.
This isn't even. There's elements. So
okay, well, let's get that all those nuances done before you send it to legal for their approval to that or for their.
Yeah, they need to make
expertise.
Sure that it just conforms to legality.
Okay.
There's stuff we can do before then. It takes time and practice or whatever. I don't know, but. Otherwise, I'm just going to do it.
My question is right now. I'd like to get Wally back to what he was, and I apologize. You were listed as legal on there.
I know. I didn't.
You were listed as legal on there. I think we have some questions amongst all three of us. I apologize for that, Wally.
I think we thought it was further along than it actually was. So, in most cases, if that would have been the case, we would have been crossing a T and dotting an I and making a typo deal. It is not there yet. But it will be, and it's plowable ground. There's probably not a whole lot that you're going to catch. I'm confident that I went through it several times, so it should be good, and it'll be easy for all parties concerned at this point.
We cried wolf. We're sorry.
No, I apologize. I get it.
I know you're busy. I know you've
got
a lot of
stuff coming up. So
I get pulled in every direction.
Apologies. Yeah, yes,
thank you.
I get it.
I want the meeting to be hanging on me if I.
We moved on without you, but
I was
worried about you over there. I wanted to just make sure that
this is a workshop. It will always be treated as that as long as I'm here. There's nothing. Three of the first people, it doesn't matter. As long as we get to everything and we're moving the ball down the field, that's exactly what we need to do.
And I think, like I said, that it was listed as legal, like as if you had to be here. I think it's premature.
Okay.
Thank you, sir, for popping over. Glad to see you. Good to see you're up and you're okay.
I'm back. I'm okay.
Blood pressure back down.
It is.
Attaboy.
We like to avoid strokes. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
I'll click the feedback.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Let's get back to our agenda here.
Where are we at on this floor plan?
I'll find it here.
Oh, good.
Okay, so 1A, then we're just going to continue to proofread it. And
I want to see it next week. But
jot in concerns, and then we'll review it again next Tuesday. That makes sense?
Whatever works for all parties concerned.
Yeah.
You'll get it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we'll try for next week. Let's try for next Tuesday, okay?
Are we having a city county? Because it might be great if it was in almost final draft form to at least...
Like I said, I don't...
My problem is I have a tabletop exercise in Medford. I have to leave at 11 to get...
Today?
I'll miss the city county meeting on the 24th.
Oh.
We had talked about it last month. You weren't here for it. That it was going to be a conflict, this one. We talked about maybe trying to do one outside of that time. Our calendar still needs to be synced with city. Our quarterly meetings are still on there, as well as now these monthly ones. And I don't know if we want to continue to try these monthlies on the same day we have CAJO.
I think they work. We do CAJO. That's the reason I suggested we put them there, is because there's only a handful of things that we do every month. And we always do CAJO.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good...
Okay.
It's when I get my teeth cleaned, you know, because I'm going to be in town for CAJO. I don't know if that... It just... There's very little in our lives that we can hang our hats on, that we're going to be there every day.
Yeah.
Weekly business sessions for me and CAJO are those things that we do on...
It just limits us to 1 hour. So, and maybe that's okay.
It's okay.
We had talked about that, but this one all
about. We had talked about having ODOT here, and I still haven't heard back from Jerry Marmon. He's the guy that is would come to talk to us about off-ramps and on-ramps.
It might be good. I thought we were going to do a special meeting for that one. Because we knew when we talked last month, I wasn't going to be here on the 24th.
That
would work out okay, because Jerry Marmon can't be here for that particular subject. So, I'd like you to be there, because he had a lot of input on it.
Okay.
You need to be here for this thing, because you're going to be carrying the water on it for a while. So let's just figure out another day of the week to do it, and we'll work that out. We don't have to do it right now. You can do it with the staff afterwards and make sure that we... But I do want to see it next week. I don't want this to languish too far.
And
we're 99% there with the edits that I think that we've got. So we'll be good.
Okay.
I'm not worried about it.
Get that, Wendy? Thank you. Let's see. We've had our finance report, and we've had our legal counsel. Item number four, other business. Any other matters to come before the board?
Mr. Chair, I've been approached by the Farm Bureau to investigate having a wildlife officer. I reached out to Jackson County. I know that they've got a couple in contract with the Department of Agriculture. So I'm working on whether or not there are state funds that are available for this. We have not had one in a long time, but I think that there's getting to be a need, apparently, and I didn't miss the meeting. I was told at the Rural Planning Commission by Mr. Krause, because it's the deal, that they didn't have a Farm Bureau meeting. Then he texts me at 6 o'clock when it's supposed to start, hey, are you going to be here? I was like, Bob, you told me 2 hours ago you weren't having this meeting, and you're the president, so I'm sorry, I don't know who else to ask. Anyway, long story short, I will be there next month at the Farm Bureau thing to hear their concerns about wildlife, mostly cougars around the county and the predation that's infringing and having an effect on our livestock or whatever. So, but in the meantime, I wanted to do some groundwork. Just so you know, I'm not coming up with this plan on my own. It's kind of being asked, and I don't expect us to put in, you know, like money, but I think there's money at the state available for these things. We've just never drawn on it. And if we can partner with Jackson County's contract, it may not cost us anything. I know they put in general fund dollars, because they have them, over there to subsidize the two officers that they have, but it may not cost us a whole lot. And I think I've got Jackson County convinced that there's a regional approach to it. You can't just be trying to do your wildlife on your side of the Applegate. You've got to get them on both sides. So,
and I think that it's right around the corner now, and it's going to be wolves. Wolves are starting to pop up in southern Oregon, and it won't take them long. They have a tendency to overpopulate rather than underpopulate, so, because that's just the nature of the beast. So I think, you know, we need to really consider a wildlife officer of some sort.
Whose authority do they operate under? Are they kind of part of animal control or under sheriff? Or
mm-hmm. It's the Department of Agriculture, I think, is who's got those. I don't know that they're called officers. I'm not really sure. They're just wildlife.
It used to be years ago they called county trapper.
Yeah. I think there's a more official name now.
Dean Lowe was one for a while, and Ray Petty was a county trapper for a while. They just answered complaints, set snares, had different sets for different critters, and took care of it.
Interesting.
Okay.
We had a letter that we started to look at Tuesday, sent you information. They need it today or tomorrow.
What's that?
They asked that we have this letter to them today at the latest by tomorrow.
I will do it today.
So we're on board, so it's a matter of, okay.
Yep. Okay, Andy, do you have anything for under other business?
Not that I can remember at the moment. My head's cloudy. Sorry.
You don't sound well. So, board business resolution number, moving on to item 5A. Board Business Resolution Number 2018-023 in the matter of an appointment to the Rural Planning Commission. Commissioner Hare?
Yes, this is an alternate position for Hamid. I don't have my packet. I also need a request to remove somebody. Shikari? I can't remember how he pronounces the last name, but... that's who I'm recommending for the alternate position. He's accepted that if we make that appointment next week. Also, Teresa something. She was in the pool of Rural Planning Commission applicants, and she was the only qualified person to be filling the slot on the Urban Planning Commission. I reached out to her and asked if she could clarify one way or the other whether she wanted to or didn't want to or something be appointed to the Urban Planning Commission. She did express that she had an interest in being on the Rural Planning Commission, and I said, your qualifications really lend yourself to being on the Urban Planning Commission. It's outside of your just general geographic location. She has to reside within the city limits. And she didn't get back to me, and so I made a decision to just appoint her to the Urban Planning Commission, and I erred. She's not interested in that position. In the Urban Planning Commission. But her skill set and her perspective is not exactly what I would endorse to be put on the Rural Planning Commission. So she's back in the pool, but as long as I'm sitting here, that is not my recommended person for filling a slot on the Rural Planning Commission. Her perspective on things is from an urban perspective. She doesn't want, she told me, she doesn't endorse the use of planned unit developments in a rural setting. I disagree wholeheartedly. I like the fact that it doesn't, the distributed element, you can have RR5 on that Wix or some property out there, 100 acres, but they're all concentrated and there's this undevelopable rural element that's kind of like everybody's recreational opportunity. That is what I like to see in a rural setting where people aren't utilizing the land for either EFU, farming it, or timber production. And even if you are, you're not impacting the full resource land the same way. So I have a different perspective than her. And
well, and every little town should have a little convenience store.
And you don't even have to have a... I think you're thinking of the urban...
Yeah.
Element of a planned
sure.
unit development. There doesn't have to be any services with that. It can be a concentrated development
yeah.
Of houses without any services necessarily.
With like interests.
Yes.
You know, that's where you...
But you've got still the rural setting. It's just you're concentrating and reducing the impact on wildlife. We have a wildlife ordinance. That's the large deer migratory thing. Anyway, I'm not speaking well today, but there's rationale that I endorse with the planned unit development as an option in a rural setting. So that was just one example. I don't think her perspective is what I'd like to... anyway,
so
I've said
enough. Do you have someone in mind for the...
I do not.
For you to...
We don't have another applicant that qualifies.
So we're back to the pool.
Yep.
Okay.
So we need to rescind.
So we won't move this to the consent calendar without going back to the board.
So we would need a resolution to rescind the
order. I'll move this one forward. I need a resolution to rescind the other order.
Yeah.
No problem. No big deal. That's what I told her. Say, we can do that next week, and you're off. So.
Okay, and now we're ready. You're done with A and ready for B?
B's not me. I don't think D's me.
Yes, it is. Resolution number 2018-024 in the matter of appointment of Josephine County Housing and Community Development.
I know. Don't tell them.
I know.
Oh, Karen Chase. Yes, I already answered this one. Yes, Karen Chase is phenomenal. So she's going to...
Okay.
I 4-year term to expire 2022.
Yep. So we'll move that one forward.
Everybody knows Karen
Chase.
She's great.
Yeah. Got it.
She'd be a good fit for that.
Yeah, she's perfect.
Good. So B's resolved. A needs to go back to the drawing board.
Nope.
No.
A's good.
A's
B's
good.
A's good.
And
okay.
A separate issue related to A. We'll come back.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
We got it.
Okay. Item number C, matters from commissioners.
I don't have anything.
Had a real raucous fair board meeting the other night. They're moving forward. I've got a couple, 3 or 4 things that they brought up that need legal's advice on before they, I said, before you go any farther, I said, you need to get this to Leah. And I've already talked to Leah that they're going to be bringing that little couple, 3 items.
I am a little concerned about the direction and the being out in front of maybe our efforts with going forward with a master plan and stuff like that. That isn't necessarily, I know you're a liaison and stuff, but I fear these trajectories going in different directions and... I appreciate everything the Fair Board does and that sort of deal, but we've got to have a cohesive vision. If there's division from the start, it only gets worse an exponential way the farther we... So whatever it is that you have to bring back to tell us of what their perspective is, where they're planning to go, any ideas...
They're going to put that together because they've got a lot of loose ends, and I said we need to tie these up so we can present it to the board because the board needs to give you direction as to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I told them that in their master plan they were originally talking about, well, you know, where the extension is and so on and so forth. I said you need to focus your plan on what is now the footprint of the fairground, not anything around it, not public works property or anybody else's property that we are now using for other things. It's just the footprint of the fairground.
I don't necessarily mind. It just has to be dovetailed with, you know,
yeah.
We don't own Three Rivers Bus Barn. So
exactly. That's what I mean. I don't want you troubling that issue. Don't cloud that up.
Yeah. That's
don't get
exactly.
out of something and then say, well, no,
great,
we're gonna do this.
Great
do that.
Word for that.
Deal with what you have right now as the fairground.
Yeah.
That is used now for the fairground.
I did get the numbers for the arena. It's 800 linear feet. The tallest section is 18 feet. I need to talk to Streeter and maybe Ryan about, you know, putting up an 18-foot board as opposed to overlapping, you know, the top first section, first 9, 10 feet goes on first, and then you put the second section around the wrap, you know, so they overlap. Because putting up an 18-foot board, that's a lot more challenging. You get twists and all sorts of stuff. You can cut 9, 10-foot boards all day long. Trying to get a log that's going to give you a nice 12 by 12-foot, 10-foot, 10-inch, 12-inch board, 18 feet long, that's a lot harder to get, you know, without the curves and stuff. So just one of those things will work out, but it's not chump change. I think it's 14,000 board feet, if I did my math right. So it takes about 3 truckloads, about 4,000 board feet on a truckload. So we'll get them. We've got plenty.
Yep.
I am not going to go to the Mental Health Advisory Board at noon just because I'm not feeling well. If either of you would want to go, they do serve lunch, but I just want to give you a heads up.
I'm going to be in Merlin with
okay.
Yeah, I've got
Mr. Hurst.
It's lunch. Usual one.
I missed Hurst yesterday, and I can't miss him today.
So my head's exploding. I just don't think I should make it.
Okay. Seeing nothing else, we are adjourned at 10:53.
Cool.
You got the recorder. It's a side switch.